and fermenting fruit. You ought to try one. I know how to do them just right. I don't like my whites to move, you know. The yolk I want soft, but not runny. Want it like wet velvet. How come you don't just try one? She had dumped the peelings in a large crock, which, like most everything in the house, had been made for some other purpose. Now she stood before the dry sink, pumping water into a blue and white basin, which she used for a saucepan. Now, the water and egg have to meet each other on a kind of equal standing. One can't get the upper hand over the other. So the temperature has to be the same for both. I knock the chill off the water first, just a chill. I don't let it get warm, because the egg is room temperature, you see. Now then, the real secret is right here in the boiling. When the tiny bubbles come to the surface, when they're as big as peas, and just before they get big as marbles, well, right then, you take the pot off the fire. You don't just put the fire out. You take the pot off. Then you put a folded newspaper over the pot and do one small obligation, like answering the door or emptying the bucket and bringing it in off the front porch. I generally go to the toilet. Not for a long stay, mind you, just a short one. If you do all that, you got yourself a perfect soft-boiled egg. I remember the messes I used to make for my father when I cooked. Your father, she directed a thumb at Milkman. He couldn't cook worth poot. Once I made a cherry pie for him, or tried to. Macon was a nice boy, and awful good to me. Be nice if you could have known him then. He would have been a real good friend to you, too, like he was to me. Her voice made Milkman think of pebbles, little round pebbles that bumped up against each other. Maybe she was hoarse, or maybe it was the way she said her words, with both a drawl and a clip. The piney whiny smell was narcotic, and so was the sun streaming in, strong and unfettered, because there were no curtains or shades at the windows that were all around the room, two in each of three walls, one on each side of the door, one on either side of the sink and the stove, and two on the farther wall. The fourth wall must back on the bedrooms, Milkman thought. The pebbly voice, the sun, the narcotic wine smell weakened both the boys, and they sat in a pleasant semi-stupor, listening to her go on and on. Hadn't been for your daddy, I wouldn't be here today. I would have died in the womb and died again in the woods. Those woods and the dark would have surely killed me. But he saved me. And here I am, boiling eggs. Our papa was dead, you see. They blew him 5 feet up into the air. He was sitting on his fence waiting for him. And they snuck up from behind and blew him 5 feet into the air. So when we left Circe's big house, we didn't have no place to go. So we just walked around and lived in them woods, farm country. But Papa came back one day. We didn't know it was him at first, 'cause we both saw him blowed 5 feet into the air. We were lost then. And talking about dark, you think dark is just one color, but it ain't. There are 5 or 6 kinds of black, some silky, some woolly, some just empty, some like fingers, and it don't stay still. It moves and changes from one kind of black to another. Saying something is pitch black is like saying something is green. What kind of green? Green like my bottles? Green like a grasshopper? Green like a cucumber, lettuce, or green like the sky is just before it breaks loose to storm? Well, night black is the same way. May as well be a rainbow. Now we lost, and there was this wind, and in front of us was the back of our daddy. We were some scared children. Macon kept telling me that things we were scared of wasn't real. What difference do it make if the thing you're scared of is real or not? I remember doing laundry for a man and his wife once, down in Virginia. The husband came into the kitchen one afternoon, shivering, and saying, "Did I have any coffee made?" I asked him, "What was it that had grabbed hold of him? He looked so bad." He said he couldn't figure it out, but he felt like he was about to fall off a cliff. Standing right there, on that yellow and white and red linoleum, as level as a flat iron. He was holding on to the door first, then the chair, trying his best not to fall down. I opened my mouth to tell him wasn't no cliff in that kitchen. Then I remembered how it was being in those woods. I felt it all over again. So I told the man, did he want me to hold on to him so he couldn't fall? He looked at me with the most grateful look in the world. "Would you?" he said. I walked around back of him, locked my fingers in front of his chest, and held on to him. His heart was kicking under his vest like a mule in heat, but little by little, it calmed down. "You saved his life," said Guitar. "No such thing." His wife come in before it was time to let go. She asked me what I was doing, and I told her.
Told her what? What'd you say?
The truth? That I was trying to keep him from falling off a cliff? I bet he wished he had jumped off then. She believe you? Don't tell me she believed you. Not right away she didn't, but soon as I let go, he fell. Dead weight to the floor. Smashed his glasses and everything. Fell right on his face. And you know what? He went down so slow. I swear it took 3 minutes. 3 whole minutes. To go from a standing upright position to when he mashed his face on the floor. I don't know if the cliff was real or not, but it took him 3 minutes to fall down it. "Was he dead?" asked Guitar. "Stone dead." "Who shot your daddy? Did you say somebody shot him?" Guitar was fascinated, his eyes glittering with lights. 5 feet into the air. "Who?" "I don't know who, and I don't know why. I just know what I'm telling you. What, when, and where." "You didn't say where?" He was insistent. "I did too, off a fence." "Where was the fence?" "On our farm." Guitar laughed, but his eyes were too shiny to convey much humor. "Where was the farm?" "Montour County." He gave up on where. "Well, when then?" "When he sat there, on the fence." Guitar felt like a frustrated detective. "What year?" "The year they shot them Irish people down in the streets. Was a good year for guns and grave diggers. I know that." Pilot put a barrel lid on the table. Then she lifted the eggs from the wash basin and began to peel them. Her lips moved as she played an orange seed around in her mouth. Only after the eggs were split open, revealing moist, reddish-yellow centers, did she return to her story. One morning,
We woke up when the sun was nearly a quarter way across the sky, bright as anything, and blue, blue like the ribbons on my mother's bonnet. See that streak of sky? She pointed out the window. Right behind them hickories. See, right over there? They looked and saw the sky stretching back behind the houses and the trees. That's the same color, she said, as if she had discovered something important. Same color as my mama's ribbons. I know her ribbon color anywhere, but I don't know her name. After she died, Papa wouldn't let anybody say it. Well, before we could get the sand rubbed out of our eyes and take a good look around, we saw him sitting there on a stump, right in the sunlight. We started to call him, but he looked off like he was looking at us and not looking at us the same time. Something in his face scared us. It was like looking at a face underwater. Papa got up after a while and moved out of the sun, on back into the woods. We just stood there, looking at the stump, shaking like leaves. Pilot scraped the eggshells together into a little heap, her fingers fanning out over and over again in a gentle sweeping. The boys watched, afraid to say anything, lest they ruin the next part of her story, and afraid to remain silent, lest she not go on with its telling. Shaking like leaves, she murmured, just like leaves. Suddenly, she lifted her head and made a sound like a hoo-ah. Ooh, here I come. Neither milkman nor guitar saw or heard anyone approaching, but Pilot jumped up and ran toward the door. Before she reached it, a foot kicked it open, and Milkman saw the bent back of a girl. She was dragging a large, 5-bushel basket of what looked like brambles, and a woman was pushing the other side of it, saying, "Watch the door sill, baby." "I got it," the girl answered. "Push." "About time," said Pilot. "The light be gone before you know it." "Tommy's chuck broke down," the girl said, panting. When the two had managed to get the basket into the room, the girl stretched her back and turned around facing them. But Milkman had no need to see her face. He had already fallen in love with her behind. "Hager?" Pilot looked around the room. "This here's your brother, Milkman, and this is his friend. What's your name again, pretty?" "Guitar." "Guitar? You play any?" she asked. "That ain't her brother, Mama. They cousins," the older woman spoke. "Same thing." "No, it ain't. Is it, baby?" "No," said Hager. "It's different. See there, it's different." "Well, what is the difference, Reba? You know so much." Reba looked at the ceiling. "A brother is a brother if you both got the same mother, or if you both—" Pilot interrupted her. "I mean, what's the difference in the way you act toward them? Don't you have to act the same way to both?" "That's not the point, Mama." "Shut up, Reba. I'm talking to Hager." "Yes, Mama, you treat them both the same. Then why they got two words for it instead of one, if there ain't no difference?" Reba put her hands on her hips and opened her eyes wide. "Pull that rocker over here," said Pilot. "You boys have to give up your seats unless you're going to help." The women circled the basket, which was full of blackberries, still on their short, thorny branches. "What we have to do?" Guitar asked. "Get them little berries off them hateful branches without popping them. Reba, get that other crock." Hager looked around, all eyes and hair. "Why don't we pull a bed out of the back room? Then we can all sit down." Floor's good enough for me, said Pilot, and she squatted down on her haunches and lifted a branch gently from the basket. This all you got? No. Reba was side-rolling a huge crock. Two more outside. Better bring them in. Draw too many flies out there. Hager started for the door and motioned to Milkman. Come on, brother. You can help. Milkman jumped up, knocking his chair backward, and trotted after Hager. She was, it seemed to him, as pretty a girl as he'd ever seen. She was much, much older than he was. She must be as old as Guitar, maybe even 17. He seemed to be floating, more alive than he'd ever been, and floating. Together, he and Hager dragged two baskets up the porch stairs and into the house. She was as strong and muscular as he was. Careful, Guitar, go slow. You keep on busting him. Leave him alone, Reba. He got to get the feel first. I asked you, did you play any? That why they call you Guitar? Not 'cause I do play. Because I wanted to. When I was real little, so they tell me. Where'd you ever see a guitar? It was a contest in a store down home in Florida. I saw it when my mother took me downtown with her. I was just a baby. It was one of those things where you guess how many beans in the big glass jar and you win a guitar. I cried for it, they said, and always talked about it. You should have called Reba. She'd get it for you. No, you couldn't buy it. You had to give the number of jelly beans. I heard you. Reba would have known how many. Reba wins things. She ain't never lost nothing. Really? Guitar smiled, but he was doubtful. She lucky? Sure I'm lucky, Reba grinned. People come from everywhere to get me to stand in for 'em at drawings and give them numbers to play. It works pretty well for them, and it always works for me. I win everything I try to win, and lots of things I don't even try to win. Got to where won't nobody sell her a raffle ticket. They just want her to hold theirs. See this? Reba put her hand down in the top of her dress and pulled out a diamond ring attached to a string. I won this last year. I was the, what was it, Mama? 500,000th. 500. No, it wasn't. That ain't what they said. 500,000 is what they said. That's right. The 500,000th person to walk into Sears and Roebuck. Her laughter was gay and proud. They didn't want to give it to her, said Hager, 'cause she looked so bad. Guitar was astonished. I remember that contest, but I don't remember hearing nothing about no colored person winning it. Guitar, a habitual street roamer, believed he knew every public thing going on in the city. Nobody did. They had picture-taking people and everything waiting for the next person to walk in the door. But they never did put my picture in the paper. Me and Mama looked, too, didn't we? She glanced at Pilot for confirmation and went on. But they put the picture of the man who won the second prize in. He won a war bond. He was white. Second prize? Guitar asked. What kind of second prize? Either you the 500,000th person or you ain't. Can't be no next to the 500,000th. Can if the winner is Reba, Hager said. The only reason they got a second was 'cause she was the first. And the only reason they gave it to her was because of them cameras. Tell 'em why you was in Sears, Reba. Looking for a toilet, Reba threw her head back to let the laughter escape. Her hands were stained with blackberry juice, and when she wiped the tears from her eyes, she streaked the purple from her nose to her cheekbone. Much lighter than Pilate or Hagar, Reba had the simple eyes of an infant. All of them had a guileless look about them, but complication and something more lurked behind Pilate's and Hagar's faces. Only Reba, with her light, pimply skin and deferential manner, looked as though her simplicity might also be vacuousness. And with two toilets downtown, they let colored in, Mayflower Restaurant and Sears. Sears was closer. Good thing nature wasn't in a hurry. They kept me there 15 minutes, getting my name and address to send the diamond over to me. But I wouldn't let them send it to me. I kept asking them, "Is this a real contest? I don't believe you." "It was worth a diamond ring to get you out of there, drawing a crowd and getting ready to draw flies," said Hagar. "What are you going to do with the ring?" Milkman asked her. "Wear it. Seldom I win something I like." "Everything she wins, she give away," Hagar said. "To a man," said Pilate. "She don't never keep none of it." "That's what she want to win, a man. Worse than Santa Claus. Funny kind of luck. Ain't no luck at all. He comes just once a year." Hagar and Pilate pulled the conversation apart, each yanking out some thread of comment, more to herself than to Milkman or Guitar, or even Reba, who had dropped her ring back inside her dress and was smiling sweetly and deftly separating the royal purple berries from their twigs. Milkman was 5'7" then, but it was the first time in his life that he remembered being completely happy. He was with his friend, an older boy, wise and kind and fearless. He was sitting comfortably in the notorious wine house. He was surrounded by women who seemed to enjoy him and who laughed out loud. And he was in love. No wonder his father was afraid of them. "When will this wine be ready?" he asked. "This batch?" "Few weeks," Pilate said. "You gonna let us have some?" Guitar smiled. "Sure." "You want some now?" "Plenty wine in the cellar." "I don't want that. I want some of this. Some of the wine I made." "You think you made this?" Pilate laughed at him. "You think this is all there is to it? Picking a few berries?" "Oh," Guitar scratched his head. "I forgot. We got to mash them in our bare feet." "Feet? Feet?" Pilate was outraged. "Who makes wine with their feet?" "Might taste good, Mama," said Hagar.
"Couldn't taste no worse," Reba said.
"Your wine any good, Pilate?" asked Guitar. "Couldn't tell you." "Why not? Never tasted it?" Milkman laughed. "You sell wine you don't even taste? Folks don't buy it for the taste. Buy it to get drunk." Reba nodded. "Used to, anyway. Ain't buying nothing now. Don't nobody want no cheap home brew. The Depression's over," Hagar said. "Everybody got work now. They can afford to buy four roses." "Plenty still buy," Pilate told her. "Where you get the sugar for it?" Guitar asked. "Black market," said Reba. "What plenty? Tell the truth, Mama. If Reba hadn't won that 100 pounds of groceries, we'd have starved last winter." "Would not." Pilate put a fresh piece of twig in her mouth. "We would have." "Hagar, don't contradict your Mama," Reba whispered. "Who was going to feed us?" Hagar was insistent. "Mama can go for months without food, like a lizard." "Lizard live that long without food?" asked Reba. "Girl, ain't nobody going to let you starve. You ever had a hungry day? Pilot asked her granddaughter. Of course she ain't, said her mother. Hager tossed a branch to the heap on the floor and rubbed her fingers. The tips were colored a deep red. Some of my days were hungry once. With the quickness of birds, the heads of Pilot and Reba shot up. They peered at Hager, then exchanged looks. Baby? Reba's voice was soft. You been hungry, baby? Why didn't you say so? Reba looked hurt. We get you anything you want, baby. Anything. You been knowing that. Pilot spit her twig into the palm of her hand. Her face went still. Without those moving lips, her face was like a mask. It seemed a milkman that somebody had just clicked off a light. He looked at the faces of the women. Reba's had crumpled. Tears were streaming down her cheeks. Pilot's face was still as death, but alert as though waiting for some signal. Hager's profile was hidden by her hair. She leaned forward, her elbows on her thighs, rubbing fingers that looked bloodstained in the lessening light. Her nails were very, very long. The quiet held. Even Guitar didn't dare break it. Then Pilot spoke. Reba, she don't mean food. Realization swept slowly across Reba's face, but she didn't answer. Pilot began to hum as she returned to plucking the berries. After a moment, Reba joined her, and they hummed together in perfect harmony until Pilot took the lead. Oh, sugar man, don't leave me here. Cotton balls to choke me. Oh, sugar man, don't leave me here. Buckra's arms to yoke me. When the two women got to the chorus, Hager raised her head and sang too. Sugar man done fly away. Sugar man done gone. Sugar man cut across the sky. Sugar man gone home. Milkman could hardly breathe. Hager's voice scooped up what little pieces of heart he had left to call his own. When he thought he was going to faint from the weight of what he was feeling, he risked a glance at his friend and saw the setting sun gilding Guitar's eyes, putting into shadow a slow smile of recognition. Delicious as the day turned out to be for Milkman, it was even more so because it included secrecy and defiance, both of which dissipated within an hour of his father's return. Freddie had let Macon Dead know that his son had spent the afternoon drinking in the wine house. He's lying. We didn't drink nothing. Nothing. Guitar didn't even get the glass of water he asked for. Freddie never lies. He misrepresents, but he never lies. He lied to you. About the wine drinking, maybe, but not about your being there, huh? No, sir, not about that. Milkman softened his tone a bit, but succeeded in keeping the edge of defiance in his voice. Now, what were your instructions from me? You told me to stay away from there, to stay away from Pilot. Right. But you never told me why. They're our cousins. She's your own sister. And you're my own son. And you will do what I tell you to do, with or without explanations. As long as your feet are under my table, you'll do in this house what you are told. At 52, Macon Dead was as imposing a man as he had been at 42, when Milkman thought he was the biggest thing in the world, bigger even than the house they lived in. But today he had seen a woman who was just as tall and who had made him feel tall, too. You know, I'm the youngest one in this family, but I ain't no baby. You treat me like I was a baby. You keep saying you don't have to explain nothing to me. How do you think that makes me feel? Like a baby, that's what? Like a 12-year-old baby. Don't you raise your voice to me. Is that the way your father treated you when you were 12? Watch your mouth, Macon roared. He took his hands out of his pockets, but didn't know what to do with them. He was momentarily confused. His son's question had shifted the scenery. He was seeing himself at 12, standing in milkman's shoes, and feeling what he himself had felt for his own father. The numbness that had settled on him when he saw the man he loved and admired fall off the fence, something wild ran through him when he watched the body twitching in the dirt. His father had sat for 5 nights on a split rail fence cradling a shotgun, and in the end died protecting his property. Was that what this boy felt for him? Maybe it was time to tell him things. Well, did he? I worked right alongside my father, right alongside him. From the time I was 4 or 5, we worked together, just the two of us. Our mother was dead, died when Pilot was born. Pilot was just a baby. She stayed over at another farm in the daytime. I carried her over there myself in my arms every morning. Then I'd go back across the fields and meet my father. We'd hitch President Lincoln to the plow. And that's what we called her, President Lincoln. Papa said Lincoln was a good plow hand before he was president. And you couldn't take a good plow hand away from his work. He called our farm Lincoln's Heaven. It was a little bit of place, but it looked big to me then. I know now it must have been a little bit of place, maybe 150 acres. We tilled 50. About 80 of it was woods. Must have been a fortune in oak and pine. Maybe that's what they wanted, the lumber, the oak, and the pine. We had a pond that was 4 acres and a stream full of fish, right down in the heart of a valley. Prettiest mountain you ever saw, Montour Ridge. We lived in Montour County, just north of Susquehanna. We had a 4-stall hog pen. The big barn was 40 feet by 140, hip roof too. And all around in the mountains was deer and wild turkey. You ain't tasted nothing till you taste wild turkey the way Papa cooked it. He'd burn it real fast in the fire, burn it black all over. That sealed it, sealed the juices in. Then he'd let it roast on a spit for 24 hours. When you cut the black burnt part off, the meat underneath was tender, sweet, juicy. And we had fruit trees, apple, cherry. Pilot tried to make me a cherry pie once. Macon paused and let the smile come on. He had not said any of this for years, had not even reminisced much about it recently. When he was first married, he used to talk about Lincoln's Heaven to Ruth. Sitting on the porch swing in the dark, he would recreate the land that was to have been his. Or when he was just starting out in the business of buying houses, he would lounge around the barber shop and swap stories with the men there. But for years, he hadn't had that kind of time or interest. But now, he was doing it again with his son, and every detail of that land was clear in his mind. The well, the apple orchard, President Lincoln, her foal, Mary Todd, Ulysses S. Grant, their cow, General Lee, their hog. That was the way he knew what history he remembered. His father couldn't read, couldn't write, knew only what he saw and heard tell of. But he had etched in Macon's mind certain historical figures
and as a boy in school, Macon thought of the personalities of his horse, his hog, when he read about these people. His father may have called their plow horse President Lincoln as a joke, but Macon always thought of Lincoln with a fondness, since he had loved him first as a strong, steady, gentle, and obedient horse. He even liked General Lee, for one spring they had slaughtered him and ate the best pork outside Virginia. From the butt to the smoked ham, to the ribs, to the sausage, to the jowl, to the feet, to the tail, to the head cheese, for 8 months. And there was crackling in November. General Lee was all right by me, he told Milkman, smiling. Finest general I ever knew. Even his balls was tasty. Sis say made up the best pot of maws she ever cooked. Huh. I forgotten that woman's name. That was it. Circe. Worked at a big farm some white people owned in Danville, Pennsylvania. Funny how things get away from you. For years you can't remember nothing. Then just like that, it all comes back to you. Had a dog run they did. That was a big sport back then. Dog races. White people did love their dogs. Kill a nigger and comb their hair at the same time. But I've seen grown white men cry about their dogs. His voice sounded different to Milkman, less hard, and his speech was different, more southern and comfortable and soft. Milkman spoke softly, too. Pilot said, somebody shot your father 5 feet. Into the air. Took him 16 years to get that farm to where it was paying. It's all dairy country up there now. Then it wasn't. Then it was nice. Who shot him, Daddy? Macon focused his eyes on his son. Papa couldn't read. Couldn't even sign his name. He had a mark he used. They tricked him. He signed something, I don't know what, and they told him they owned his property. He never read nothing. I tried to teach him, but he said he couldn't remember those little marks from one day to the next. Wrote one word in his life, Pilate's name, copied it out of the Bible. That's what she got folded up in that earring. He should have let me teach him everything bad that ever happened to him. Happened because he couldn't read. Got his name messed up because he couldn't read. His name? How? When freedom came, all the colored people in the state had to register with the Freedmen's Bureau. Your father was a slave? What kind of foolish question is that? Of course he was. Who hadn't been in 1869? They all had to register free and not free. Free and used to be slaves. Papa was in his teens and went to sign up. But the man behind the desk was drunk. He asked Papa where he was born. Papa said Macon. Then he asked him who his father was. Papa said, he's dead. Asked him who owned him. Papa said, I'm free. Well, the Yankee wrote it all down, but in the wrong spaces. Had him born and done free. Wherever the hell that is, and in the space for his name, the fool wrote dead, comma, Macon. But Papa couldn't read, so he never found out what he was registered as till Mama told him. They met on a wagon going north, started talking about one thing and another, told her about being a freedman, and showed off his papers to her. When she looked at his paper, she read him out what it said. He didn't have to keep the name, did he? He could have used his real name, couldn't he? Mama liked it, liked the name. Said it was new and would wipe out the past, wipe it all out. What was his real name? I don't remember my mother too well. She died when I was 4. Light-skinned, pretty,
Look like a white woman to me. Me and Pilate don't take nothing after her. If you ever have a doubt we from Africa, look at Pilate. She looked just like Papa, and he looked like all them pictures you ever see of Africans. A Pennsylvania African. Acted like one, too. Closed his face up like a door. I saw Pilate's face like that. Milkman felt close and confidential now that his father had talked to him in a relaxed and intimate way. I haven't changed my mind, Macon. I don't want you over there. Why? You still haven't said why. Just listen to what I say. That woman's no good. She's a snake and can charm you like a snake, but still a snake. You're talking about your own sister, the one you carried in your arms to the fields every morning. That was a long time ago. You seen her? What she looked like to you? Somebody nice? Somebody normal? Well, she or somebody cut your throat. She didn't look like that, Daddy. Well, she is like that. What'd she do? It ain't what she did. It's what she is. What is she? A snake, I told you. Ever hear the story about the snake? The man who saw a little baby snake on the ground? Well, the man saw this baby snake bleeding and hurt, lying there in the dirt. And the man felt sorry for it and picked it up and put it in his basket and took it home. And he fed it and took care of it till it was big and strong, fed it the same thing he ate. Then one day, the snake turned on him and bit him, stuck his poison tongue right in the man's heart. And while he was laying there dying, he turned to the snake and asked him, "What'd you do that for?" He said, "Didn't I take good care of you? Didn't I save your life?" The snake said, "Yes." "Then what'd you do it for? What'd you kill me for?" Know what the snake said? Said, "But you knew I was a snake, didn't you? Now, I mean for you to stay out of that wine house and far away from Pilate as you can." Milkman lowered his head. His father had explained nothing to him. "Boy, you got better things to do with your time. Besides, it's time you started learning how to work. You start Monday. After school, come to my office. Work a couple of hours there and learn what's real. Pilate can't teach you a thing you can use in this world. Maybe the next, but not this one. Let me tell you right now, the one important thing you'll ever need to know. Own things. And let the things you own other things. Then you'll own yourself and other people too. Starting Monday, I'm going to teach you how." Chapter 3. Life improved for Milkman enormously after he began working for Macon. Contrary to what his father hoped, there was more time to visit the wine house. Running errands for Macon's rent houses gave him leave to be in Southside and to get to know the people Guitar knew so well. Milkman was young, and he was friendly, just the opposite of his father, and the tenants felt at ease enough with him to tease him, feed him, confide in him. But it was hard to see much of Guitar. Saturdays were the only days he was certain to find him. If Milkman got up early enough on Saturday morning, he could catch his friend before Guitar went roaming the streets, and before he himself had to help Macon collect rents. But there were days in the week when they agreed to skip school and hang out, and on one of those days, Guitar took him to Feathers Pool Hall on 10th Street, right in the middle of the Blood Bank area. It was 11 o'clock in the morning when Guitar pushed open the door and shouted, "Hey, Feather, give us a couple of red caps." Feather, a short, squat man with sparse but curly hair, looked up at Guitar, then at Milkman, and frowned. Get him out of here. Guitar stopped short and followed the little man's gaze to Milkman's face and back again. The half-dozen men there playing pool turned around at the sound of Feather's voice. Three of them were Air Force pilots, part of the 32nd Fighter Group. Their beautiful hats and gorgeous leather jackets were carefully arranged on chairs. Their hair was cut close to the skull. Their shirt cuffs were turned neatly back on their forearms. Their white scarves hung in snowy rectangles from their hip pockets. Silver chains glistened at their necks, and they looked faintly amused as they worked chalk into the tips of their cues. Guitar's face shone with embarrassment. He's with me, he said. I said, get him out of here. Come on, Feather. He's my friend. He's making Dead's boy, ain't he? So what? So get him out of here. He can't help who his daddy is. Guitar had his voice under control. Neither can I. Out. What does daddy do to you? Nothing yet. That's why I want him out of here. He ain't like his daddy. He ain't got to be like him. From him is enough. I'll be responsible for... Stop messing with me, Guitar. Get him out. He ain't old enough to have wet dreams. The pilots laughed, and a man in a gray straw hat with a white band said, I'll let the boy stay, Feather. You shut your mouth. I'm running this. What harm can he do? A 12-year-old kid? He smiled at Milkman, who stopped himself from saying, no, 13. But it ain't your problem, is it? Asked Feather. His daddy ain't your landlord, is he? And you ain't got no operating license to hang on to either. You ain't got nothing. Feather turned on the man with the white hat band, the same acid manner he'd used with the boys. Guitar took the opportunity offered by Feather's new target to shoot his hand out like a double-edged hatchet slamming into a tree and shout, later for you, man. Come on, let's shake this place. His voice now was loud and deep, loud enough and deep enough for two. Milkman slid his hands into his back pockets and followed his friend to the door. He stretched his neck a little to match the chilly height he hoped the soldiers had seen in his eyes. Silently, they ambled down 10th Street until they reached a stone bench that jutted from the sidewalk near the curb. They stopped there and sat down, their backs to the eyes of two men in white smocks who were watching them. One of the men leaned in the doorway of a barber shop. The other sat in a chair, tilted back to the plate glass window of the shop. They were the owners of the barber shop, Railroad Tommy and Hospital Tommy. Neither boy spoke, not to the men, not to each other. They sat and watched the traffic go by. Have all the halls of academe crumbled, Guitar? Hospital Tommy spoke from his chair. His eyes were milky, like those of very old people. But the rest of him was firm, lithe, and young-looking. His tone was casual, but suggested authority nonetheless. No, sir, Guitar answered him over his shoulder. Then what, pray, are you doing out here in the streets at this time of day? Guitar shrugged. We just took a day off, Mr. Tommy. And your companion? Is he on sabbatical too? Guitar nodded. Hospital Tommy talked like an encyclopedia, and Guitar had to guess at most of his words. Milkman kept looking at the cars going by. Neither one of you appears to be having much fun on your holiday. You could have stayed in the halls of Academe and looked evil. Guitar fished for a cigarette and offered one to Milkman. Feather made me mad is all.
Feather?
Yeah, he wouldn't let us in. I go in there all the time. All the time. And he don't say nothing. But today he throws us out. Said my friend here is too young. Can you beat that, Feather? Worrying about somebody's age? I didn't know Feather had so much as a brain cell to worry with. He don't. Just showing off is all. He wouldn't even let me have a bottle of beer. Railroad Tommy laughed softly from the doorway. Is that all? He wouldn't let you have a beer? He rubbed the back of his neck, then crooked a finger at Guitar. Come over here, boy, and let me tell you about some other stuff you are not going to have. Come on over here. Reluctantly, they stood up and sidled closer to the laughing man. You think that's something? Not having a beer? Well, let me ask you something. You ever stood stock still in the galley of the Baltimore and Ohio dining car in the middle of the night when the kitchen is closed down and everything's neat and ready for the next day? And the engine's highballing down the track and three of your buddies is waiting for you with a brand new deck of cards? Guitar shook his head. No, I never, yes, right. You never, and you never going to. That's one more thrill you're not going to have, let alone a bottle of beer. Guitar smiled. Mr. Tommy, he began, but Tommy cut him off. You ever pull 14 days straight and come home to a sweet woman, clean sheets, and a fifth of wild turkey? Huh? He looked at Milkman. Did you? Milkman smiled and said, no, sir. No, well, don't look forward to it, 'cause you're not gonna have that either. Hospital Tommy drew a pen feather toothpick from under his smock. Don't tease the boy, Tommy. Who's teasing? I'm telling him the truth. He ain't gonna have it. Neither one of them gonna have it. And I'll tell you something else you're not gonna have. You're not gonna have no private coach with 4 red velvet chairs that swivel around in one place whenever you want them to. No. And you're not gonna have your own special toilet and your own special made 8-foot bed either, and a valet and a cook and a secretary to travel with you and do everything you say, everything. Get the right temperature in your hot water bottle and make sure the smoking tobacco in the silver humidor is fresh each and every day. That's something else you're not going to have. You ever have $5,000 of cold cash money in your pocket and walk into a bank and tell the bank man you want such and such a house on such and such a street and he sell it to you right then? Well, you won't ever have it. And you're not going to have a governor's mansion or 8,000 acres of timber to sell. And you're not going to have no ship under your command to sail on, no train to run. And you can join the 332nd if you want to and shoot down 1,000 German planes all by yourself and land in Hitler's backyard and whip him with your own hands. But you're never going to have 4 stars on your shirt front or even 3. And you're not going to have no breakfast tray brought in to you early in the morning with a red rose on it and 2 warm croissants and a cup of hot chocolate. Nope, never. And no pheasant buried in coconut leaves for 20 days and stuffed with wild rice and cooked over a wood fire so tender and delicate it'd make you cry. and no Rothschild 29, or even Beaujolais, to go with it. A few men passing by stopped to listen to Tommy's lecture. "What's going on?" they asked Hospital Tommy. "Feather refused them a beer," he said. The men laughed. "And no baked Alaska," Railroad Tommy went on. "None. You never gonna have that."
"No baked Alaska?"
Guitar opened his eyes wide with horror and grabbed his throat. "You're breaking my heart."
"Well, now, that's something you will have, a broken heart." Railroad Tommy's eyes softened, but the merriment in them died suddenly. "And folly, a whole lot of folly. You can count on it."
"Mr. Tommy, sir," Guitar sang in mock humility, "we just wanted a bottle of beer's all."
"Yeah," said Tommy. "Yeah. Well, welcome aboard."
What's a baked Alaska? They left the Tommies just as they had found them and continued down 10th Street.
"Something sweet," answered Guitar. "A dessert."
"Tastes good?"
"I don't know. I can't eat sweets."
"You can't?" Milkman was amazed.
"Why not? Makes me sick."
"You don't like nothing sweet?"
"Fruit, but nothing with sugar. Candy, cake, stuff like that. I don't even like to smell it. Makes me want to throw up."
Milkman searched for a physical cause. He wasn't sure he trusted anybody who didn't like sweets.
"You must have sugar diabetes."
"You don't get sugar diabetes from not eating sugar. You get it from eating too much sugar."
"Then what is it then?"
"I don't know. It makes me think of dead people and white people, and I start to puke."
"Dead people?"
"Yeah, and white people. I don't get it." Guitar said nothing, so Milkman continued. "How long you been like that?"
"Since I was little. Since my father got sliced up in a sawmill and his boss came by and gave us kids some candy. Divinity. A big sack of divinity. His wife made it. Special for us. It's sweet. Divinity is. Sweeter than syrup. Real sweet. Sweeter than..." He stopped walking and wiped from his forehead the beads of sweat that were collecting there. His eyes paled and wavered. He spit on the sidewalk.
Hold it, he whispered, and stepped into a space between a fried fish restaurant and Lily's beauty parlor. Milkman waited on the sidewalk, staring at the curtained window of the beauty shop. Beauty shops always had curtains or shades up. Barbershops didn't. The women didn't want anybody on the street to be able to see them getting their hair done. They were ashamed. When Guitar emerged, his eyes were teary from the effort of dry heaving. "Come on," he said. "Let's get us some weed. That's one thing I can't have." By the time Milkman was 14, he had noticed that one of his legs was shorter than the other. When he stood barefoot and straight as a pole, his left foot was about half an inch off the floor. So he never stood straight. He slouched or leaned or stood with a hip thrown out. And he never told anybody about it, ever. When Lena said, "Mama, what is he walking like that for?" He said, "I'll walk any way I want to, including over your ugly face." Ruth said, "Be quiet, you two. It's just growing pains, Lena." Milkman knew better. It wasn't a limp. Not at all. just the suggestion of one. But it looked like an affected walk, the strut of a very young man, trying to appear more sophisticated than he was. It bothered him, and he acquired